Welcome to Breaking the Underdog Curse with Dr. Don McDonald. This show is for vitalistic chiropractors that want to take their practice to a new level. Whether that is higher volume, less stress, more congruency, or just want to continually learn and evolve. Every Wednesday, I will be bringing you an interview that will provide you with either mindset or strategies that will help you overcome your underdog curse. Whether you're plateaued, afraid to fail, or stressed out due to overwhelm, this podcast will show you how others have overcome their challenges. Make sure to go to www.drdonmcdonald.com where you can sign up to get notifications when new shows are released and see previous ones you may have missed. I hope you enjoy the show and don't forget to crush the curse. Are you a people pleaser? I know I sure am. And when you mix that with being a chiropractor, it can create a lot of trauma. I know firsthand, it can wear away at your health, your relationships, and your practice. I term this the underdog curse, and I've spent the last 15 years coming up with a solution. My book, The Underdog Curse, was written to help others live a more authentic life. This is very challenging if you're externally influenced. When you take an externally influenced person and have them try to spread the message of chiropractic, it can be very challenging. If you'd like to get back to who you really are, regain your health, strengthen your relationships, and increase your worthiness, please visit Amazon.com and pick up your copy of The Underdog Curse today. Remember, if we take the time to nurture ourselves, we are much stronger at serving others. For chiropractic to thrive, we must have thriving chiropractors. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Breaking the Underdog Curse. This is Dr. Don McDonald, your host. And today, I feel like I'm going to be speaking to a brother from another mother because we have so much stuff in common. His name is Dr. Mike Southwick, and he is from Nebraska. And I met him probably about 6 years ago, I think, at a Brad Glowacki event. And since then, we kind of talked a little bit. I think you got my book, and then we were chatting back and forth on Facebook, and then we got to spend some really good time together at ChiroFest in Vancouver, Washington. And so welcome to the podcast, Mike.
Thank you. Thanks for having me this morning.
That's awesome. It's kind of like whenever sometimes you meet people and then you kind of really click with them. And then the more you talk, the more you find you have in common with each other. So I find that we have a lot of similarities kind of through our history. So why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about you? You have an amazing practice. You do coaching, you speak at seminars. And how did this all start? Because I always ask all my people, have you always been this amazing?
Yeah, no, no, not at all. the truth is, we're all born amazing, but sometimes we don't figure it out till later, right? At the same time, I didn't grow up with any chiropractic background. In fact, I had to hurt my shoulder playing basketball. I had to go through drugs. I had to go through PT and all these things. And then in college, when I was trying to play basketball for real, had a frozen shoulder, had been through everything else. And so my sister at the time worked for a chiropractor in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. And she said, hey, you got to get in here. I mean, what do you have to lose, right? We've heard that before. What do you have to lose? I was like, hey, I guess nothing, except my shoulder. It's just killing. Right. And I went there and this guy was like, I'm going to say 70, maybe 65 at this point, and white hair, loving life, running around his office, people everywhere, beautiful office. And he helped me, you know what I mean? Within 2 weeks, I didn't know, that I even had an injury, everything. He explained chiropractic so simple. And it was literally, I said, hey, if I could ever do for someone what you just did for me, sign me up. I got to figure this out. What the hell is going on, right? 100%. And he said, well, how good a basketball player are you? I said, I'm not that good. I'm not that good. It's not, basketball's not going to happen. He said, well, how quick do you want to get in there, right? So I literally made a beeline, took as many classes as I could. I just got super hyper-focused and got to Palmer as quick as I could. And, kind of the rest is history. And you and I were at Palmer together and didn't even know about it, right?
No, 100%. And the funny thing is our stories are so similar because I was in college basketball. And how long had you suffered from your problem? Like how long was your shoulder bugging you for?
Probably initially it was bad. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then it just got to where it sucked, but it didn't prevent play, but it prevented good play, right?
100%.
And don't we see that with people that, you know, maybe they're not in crisis, but they're not, you know, abundant health and kicking butt. So it got bad when I was a senior in high school, kind of cruised down through the summer. And then the fall of the next year, probably the winter time of the next year when I was really needing it, got really, really bad again. And one morning it was just like terrible. And that's what got me to take action.
Yeah, because that was the same thing for me. It was 4 years of just suffering with this tendonitis in my knees. And again, you know, back in the day, I had to muster all my strength just so I could dunk and warm up, right? Just to impress the girls. And then I'd be paying for it for the rest of the game. But like initially when I went to a chiropractor, initially I was furious because not one person, I was the same as you. We didn't grow up with a chiropractor. I grew up in a small town. We didn't even have a chiropractor in our town. So I didn't even really know what they did. And I was furious at first.
Yeah.
Because I was like, why didn't anyone tell me about this?
Yeah.
But then I kind of spun it around and said, hey, like, this is amazing. Like I always laugh because my chiropractor, he's mellowed a bit now, but he was pretty straight, like on the world. Yep. And I remember one day I came in and I said, Dr. Duane, I can't believe more people don't believe in chiropractic. And he almost dropped his pen and almost like he was going to attack me. And he goes, there's nothing to believe in. It just is. You can walk off this building and say, I don't believe in gravity and you're going to still hit the ground. So he was like, that's how hardcore he was. But I was like, that's pretty cool. So it's so funny because we started with the same thing. Then we went to Palmer and we would have played intramural basketball together because I think I was a year or two ahead of you.
Yep.
And how did that go? We had a couple of fun stories from the old Palmer days. How was Palmer?
Yeah. Looking back on it, it was great. You know what I mean? And I was on such a beeline that I wanted to get there, get done, get my requirements and get out to get my hands on real people, you know?
Yeah.
And it's the same thing as your first chiropractor. I was like, hey, and here's the other deal. The first chiropractor I went to, he had an amazing office, stone fireplaces, skylights, a garage in the back of his office to pull into, you know, and in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, it's cold as crap, right?
Yeah.
And so that was like, so my first experience, I just thought every chiropractor had beautiful offices, multiple doctors, you know, big team, kids area, blah, 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 all this stuff. So I was like, I can't wait to get to that, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I was like, if that's what's waiting for me at the end of graduation, let's get through Palmer, you know, and it was great. No worries. Guy Reichman spoke, you know, when I was there, and then he later became president at the end. I had already actually gone on my preceptor, but you know, there was lots of things happening at that point. I just knew that in my head, if I could get out of here, I could really get to the real stuff. Right.
Right. And so like right when you graduated, you went because Nebraska's home or no?
Yeah. I grew up about a half an hour from where I am now. And Nebraska was home. Amy tells the story like when we were dating and everything, oh, I'm not going to go back to Nebraska or whatever. And just different things opened up. And I was a gondroid through and through, Gonstead Club, all this stuff. And so there was a guy that practiced straight Gonstead and Lincoln. And I went down to, just a half an hour from Lincoln and started practice. I was like, hey, if I'm going to starve, let's starve now and then make it happen.
No doubt. I always say is if you can live your life like a student for the first 4 or 5 years, and just kind of hang off there and not buying a bunch of stuff, you can kind of, it makes it a little bit easier. So when you open practice, did things kind of take off right away or did it take a bit to grow?
It always takes a bit to grow, but we did. We bought a really small house and had crappy old cars. And what I thought, you know, we were going to do right away as far as a big office and huge and everything didn't happen right away. And in fact, here's how funny it was. I came to Beatrice, my brother-in-law, who was a year ahead of me in school, had just opened a practice in that year. Okay. So he was in his first year and we got together and we said, hey, we're basically in the same spot, you know, give or take 12 months. Let's just dig in together. Right. And just be poor together and just whatever. So what we did is we had an old, super old office, right?
Yeah.
That we, with our two hands, went in there and remodeled ourselves with the help of my dad and family and whatever. And we were like, we're going to be here like 3 months. All right. And then we're going to build a new office. Well, it was 3 years, right?
It takes longer than you think.
It always does. And so what we did is we got in that old office, but we bought a piece of land. Right. And we had the vision of the new office. And so in 3 years, we built a new office. And then we practiced together another 6 or 7 years. And by the way, that office had a garage in the back, right? First one, it was so awesome. We loved it. And then we were in half of the building. And then in half of the building, we had some rental space and a garage, right? But as we grew, I could see it happening is, you know, it's hard to have two chiefs, you know? And we're like, hey, we're going to spend Christmases and Thanksgivings together. How about we get into where I'm going to run my practice, you're going to run your practice, we'll be in the same building. And it was a bittersweet day because we had to brick in the garage door. It was a, you know, whatever. yeah. So I was like, oh, son of a gun. So we don't have a garage. However, we were both doing really, really well. Yeah. And then I would say 3 years after that, he bought that whole building. And then I went to where I am, to the complex that I'm in now. We've made that an 11 business complex. And now I'm actually in the office that I went into, a bank is now in, and we're just down a couple doors that way. So it's been a crazy ride and we've done lots of things.
That's awesome. So do you own the whole building then?
Yeah. So yeah, we have about, awesome. Oh, I don't know, 17,000 square feet of commercial real estate. I own with one other partner. And so that's developed over the last 8 years. Yeah. And
That's awesome. So when you started out, you kind of started growing. Did you ever get to a point where you might have got burnt out or kind of felt like, you know, you weren't looking after yourself? Because I see a lot of chiropractors get to that point. The first one is the push. And when you just got out of school, you have lots of energy and you're like, let's go. And then maybe about 5, 6, 7 years in, like sometimes there's that, well, they always say the 7-year itch in the relationship, but how is that for you?
Yeah. We were just, for whatever reason, I just had that vision of that first office that I went to. And so until I was there, I never really had that. I didn't have that itch. Okay. Where I got it was later on, probably about even a year ago or so.
Yeah.
Where now, and let's get into this because you and I both know we're kind of the same person, obviously. But when we talk about the underdog curse, okay. Yeah. Now reading and looking at that and then looking back on my life, there were different times where I wanted to have it all, but have everyone okay with everything, meaning not ruffle any feathers, take care of everyone, all those sorts of things. And so there were times like when we split our practice, you know, being with your brother-in-law, my sister, right? She was like, what are you doing? This is not right. But I could see if we were ever both going to grow big, okay, at some point we had to do that. So I labored over that decision probably a year and a half or 2 years, right?
Totally, yes.
Not wanting to ruffle, not wanting, you know, thinking everything's going to be cool. When I went from that practice to build that commercial real estate, there were people in our town, we were going through the city council and everything, and because it needed infrastructure, it needed sewers and electricity, and it was a whole development.
Yeah.
And there was tax increment financing. And it was so funny because I was thinking I was helping our town, all right, by developing land. And I never thought to think that there would be somebody that would say, you know, in this whole process with tax increment financing, we don't need to explain it, but basically the city is going to do some infrastructure work and we're going to pay for taxes over time.
Right.
But people that don't understand that were like, they started, these keyboard jockeys started hammering me like in the local paper, like, why are we helping this doc? I mean, why have you seen his car? Have you seen his house? You know, and that's not even the house we're in now, right? But at the time, this is now 9 years ago or so. At the time I thought, how could anyone not push for progress? Like I just didn't even, you know, and in my loyal dog mentality, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm doing this. I'm putting my whole family, my career, my everything in debt and on the line for our town. And I got some people hammering on me. I'm like, how does this? So at the time, and reading the book is kind of funny because you look back, but at the time I was like, oh my gosh, that was crushing to a loyal dog.
Oh, 100%.
Right? You know, and I really took that to heart. You know, I somewhat laugh about it and look at it as motivational now. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of growth, personal growth that can happen in a small amount of time. And to even look back 8, 9 years ago, way different person. right?
Oh, 100%. Well, I think it's so funny because anytime we have a really clear crystal intent and we have a good intent and we know we have a good intent, there's nothing worse to that amiable, loyal dog personality than someone hammer you and you're like, I'm just trying to do a good job. Like, how could you ever do that? Like, it's just crushing, right? Especially when your whole goal is to have everyone like you.
I know. And truthfully, it was one or two people in the whole, you know, out of thousands. But to me, mother, father, what the heck? You know, it's like, come on, you know, I'm putting my nuts on the line for you guys. Right. So anyway, that's funny.
Well, it's just, I think it's just like chiropractors out there that, you know, you have an amazing day and you see tons of people and one person is in a bad mood. And then when you go home, it's always that person who seems to be on your head, on your mind, right?
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, getting back to the burnout story, you know, what I did is I helped out a friend over the last year and a half and different things and did a lot of teaching, did a lot of traveling. And I met amazing people. But at the same time, it wasn't, you know, my company. It wasn't my, you know, even really material. I was helping a legacy, really, and helping a ton of guys. But what ended up happening is I was on the computer late at night, early in the morning, all these things. And it was fantastic. Don't get me wrong. However, my practice, though, felt it, right?
Yeah,
felt
100%.
It. And so after a year of doing that and being gone sometimes, you know, 5 weekends in a row.
Yeah.
And my bundles of joy are now 17, 15, and 12.
Right.
And so after a year of that, man, I was burnt. I'll just admit it. You know what I mean? I was
100%.
Burnt. And I said, hey, I've carried it this far. It's time for someone else to carry it. And the payoff was different than what I thought. It was experience, which was cool, sort of. And so what happened was I was just like, hey, let's focus at home again. Let's focus on the practice, smooth teams, the real estate. You know, we have one more building that we need to get filled and built out in different things. And like I was sharing before, man, it took a month or two, but then here at home, it's just been going nutso. And that gives me a ton of excitement, pride. Again, the loyal dog loves his people. I mean, loves his people. So yesterday, the day before the American Thanksgiving, right?
Yeah.
Where everyone's jamming around. We gave out like 120 pies just for fun. You know, everyone that got adjusted and, you know, and whatever. You know,
that's
we were
awesome.
Just throwing pies around and we were having a blast and we had time. You know, I was telling Amy, I was like, we could have seen more. We could have got, you know, 30 or 40 or 50 more because we had downtimes where we were sitting around. And my team was just on it. They were loving it and whatever.
Well, and you can talk to listeners. You had a record, right? You just said yesterday you had your personal best, which again, you've been in practice for 18 years.
Yeah, right at 18. Mm-hmm.
So that's cool. That's inspiring for people out there. 18 years in practice and then smack out a new record and have a wonderful, energetic day. You know, giving back to the community and really enjoying that. So, so when, who've been your mentors? Like when you first, like, is everybody, you know, unless they're super internally driven, right? Which I don't know that many people that are, that they can just do it all on their own, but who did you surround yourself with to help get you jacked up at throughout the whole process of your practice?
Yeah. You know, different people over time, you know, and within and without, and outside of the profession, you know, you and I know, and we met at one of Brad Glowacki's, seminars. And so, you know, I've done, things with and for Brad for probably, I'm guessing 7, 8, 9 years now, right? Yeah. When he first came out with the new patient Maven type of stuff, I met him at Cal Jam. Lyle Kocha, who's a good friend, and I, you know, have done things together. Lyle is in Omaha. Those guys bang out crazy amounts. You know, I was just in his office a week ago, you know, and Amy and I were in Omaha, you know, just hanging and doing goal setting, which we might talk about later. We went to Lyle's office and he has probably in his reception area, 20 or 30 chairs. All the chairs were full. All the feeder rooms were full. People were standing around, right? You know, and so Lyle has been a mentor. Brad, of course. And then we have a pastor friend in Lincoln that has multiple campuses of churches, multiple pastors, a school, just programs that they're reaching the community like crazy. And those are the kinds of people that I'm like, wow, in a different, like in a church environment even, you know, how does a guy go from, you know, because in chiropractic, we'll have someone doing 2 a day and we'll have someone doing 300 a day. And in the church environment, you've got someone with a good, nice little church. And then you get someone just like knocking it out of the park where people are
in a stadium.
You know, so it's so crazy. So those are the kind of people that I'm like, okay, you know, how do you understand principles different than I'm understanding them at this point that I could then get to, you know, where you're going. So anyway, it's been cool.
And that's neat. And do you do any other stuff? Like, listen to like YouTube videos or audios, or what other kind of stuff have you done for your learning?
You know, on the, what have I been, you know, I read books like nuts, you know, my, if I look at this, you know, I guess tons of, you know, success books, Christian, you know, authors, everyone that blows my mind up bigger, you know, we go to Cal Jam, all the time. I'm, you know, listening and seeing what Brad's doing, with associates and, you know, just making a bigger impact. I've really been studying, the opioid epidemic, you know, all these sorts of things. It just pissed me off to the core. It's just like, you know, how can we infiltrate our community earlier, sooner, you know, better? For me, it really used to be about, number one, I had to make money, right? We get out of school, we have to make money, right? So it gets about that. But it's self-driven. You know, I'll admit that. Number two, then I got into thinking, okay, I've made some money. Now at Palmer, we had a speaker and he said that he collected $50,000 a month. And in 1997 or something, I thought, $50,000 a month. Whoa, if I ever, you know, collected $50,000 a month, you know, that would just be, oh, that'd be awesome. Well, I got to that.
Yeah.
Obviously, now if we don't collect $50,000 a month, we're, you know, losing money. But but, you know, back in that time, I thought, oh, if I ever do that. Okay, so once I checked that off the box, then I was like, well, I got to get results, you know, and I got to stick it to the man. I got to show these MDs, blah, 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 so Mike looks good.
Right.
In my previous office, I have to admit that I built that thing. I had 20-foot ceilings, and they went up, and they had skylights and everything. In fact, when the bank moved in there, they didn't change a thing.
No way.
That's funny. But that was a Mike deal. That was a look and see what I could do. And that's not the right, that's not the servant heart that I have now.
Yeah.
So when the bank came to me and said, hey, we're thinking we want this corner office. I was like, damn, take it, dude. You know what I mean? Because I get the lease, obviously. And then I moved down into a very, very nice, way better flowing office where we could see way more people. So I finally got to the point where I was like, you know what? It's not even about Mike's results, right?
Yeah.
It's about that in a town, in a region, whatever, everyone's a family. If one guy's on drugs, that affects me and that affects you.
Yeah.
And that affects their family. Everybody's met up, you know, and maybe gets on assistance. Who's paying for that? You're paying for that. Okay.
Yep.
If we have all these people going to the nursing home for $10,000 and we have people in rehab for 3 months, that's $60,000. That affects you. Okay. So we're all together, whether I live in this house, live in an apartment or I live, hey, you know, a family looks down the road 5 steps. Okay. Yep. So my plan now for my patients is, okay, step one, every day has stress. Some days have more than the other.
Right.
Step two, your nervous system has to adapt to that stress. You can either take care of it or you can let it build and build and build and blow. Okay.
Right.
When it blows, you're going to probably either get in here, which is not happening to the degree that needs to be. It's going to be over the counter first. Okay. They may get you somewhere, but they're not going to get you where you need to go. Then you're going to go to your MD. You're going to get a prescription. Okay. And one of two things, that's going to either wear you out over time and you're going to hit the nursing home for $10,000 a month, or you're going to get addicted, or you're going to have a surgery, which is how many hundreds of thousands. And then you're going to get addicted, but then you're going to have to go to rehab or you're going to die. Okay. So the number one death rate in America now, people under 50 overdoses. Okay. Let's just be honest.
Right.
And I was like, there's your 5 steps. Okay. So, you know, in a, you know, and so as a loyal guy, I have to switch out of that sometimes and say, hey, you know, it is what it is. We're all a family. I'm telling you, this is what's going to happen. You can believe me or you can look at the stats, but this is what's going to happen. And I guess that's where I've become real for my people. And it's just like, get on the table. Get on the table and get on there regularly. I used to have a hard time saying that because right. I looked at it as self-fulfilling.
You like know they, they're going to think you just want them to come in for your benefit, not for theirs.
Yeah. And I switched, you know, at some point I said, hey, I don't care whose table you get on someone's table. Oh, doc, I'll always come to you. I was like, I don't care. Get on someone's table. Now I just say, get on the freaking table.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Cut the crap. Get on the table. Right. And yeah. Pay for it, you know, pay for it before you even get on the table, you know, because, okay, you know, $50, you know, every 2 weeks or every week or every month at least. Okay. Or, yeah. $60,000 for rehab or 10,000, you know, I'm selling money for cheap, right?
Totally. Yeah. 100%. So it's quality of life too, because even if you went the other way and you're spending all that money, it's not in a nice quality of life. Like it's, no. you're just surviving. You're not thriving. Right.
Exactly. Exactly. So if you want someone else to wipe your butt and stuff like that, you know, hey, whatever, you know, it's just not my gig. It's just not my gig.
That's funny. So at the beginning, what kind of awarenesses did you come up with to be able to move to that? Because that's, if you're a huge people pleaser and you're mm-hmm. worried about, you know, recommending care, and then all of a sudden you move to get on the table, right?
Yeah.
For a people pleaser in that mindset, that seems like a huge shift. So how did that kind of unravel or evolve for you?
Yeah. Great question. You know, you need to have some rock solid tool that you use to demonstrate subluxation.
Right.
You guys know that. You went through that and you're, you know, and everything there. And so, you know, and in all honesty, I'm really excited at some point to learn what the full scope of what you guys are doing, because it excites me. And I've told you guys that. Yeah. I went through a situation where we use some motion x-rays.
Yeah.
And so it's black and white. And it's just like when someone can show you where the subluxation is, and then someone can show you when it's corrected. And then down the road, say they don't come in for a long time, you know, because people do that. We quit. Sometimes we quit doing the things that we do, working out and eating and everything. You know, we get on a psycho binge or whatever, and then we come back. Right. So when they come back down the road, you know what? I have their crap films. I have their great films. And then we'll see where they're at. And then they're like, oh, geez, we need to get in here 3 times a week again, or maybe more. I was like, okay. Yeah, I agree.
They understand.
Yeah, they, well, yeah. And they understand. And I can just sit back and say, well, it's in black and white. You know what I mean? And we already took your post ones, you know, well, you know, stress was coming in faster than we've been taking it out. You know, if they have a new injury, maybe they've said, doc, I'm only coming in once a month. All right. You and I know that's going to be a slow fade.
Yep. 100%.
It's going to be a slow fade. And they're going to probably have something down the road. They're like, we're just not kicking this. Well, let's take some films and see what's going on. Oh, we had your really crappy ones. We had your really good ones. And now you're half crappy, right? Because of that slow fade. And everyone knows if they're working out 3 or 4 times a week and they're rocking out life and they go to working out once a month, right? So it's all in that. And so I think a chiropractor has in their head a rock solid way that they can delineate, and the patient can then tell the doc, and I know you guys do some of this too, hey, I need to be in here way more. Okay. Yeah. You know, okay.
100%. Yeah.
But if a doc doesn't have that certainty and that conviction can wane, because they can't depend on anything outside of, you know, that the patient can see outside of, you know. And so that was a help. We started doing that 6 years ago. And I'm just like, dude, you know, you can see it. You know, what do you want to do? Okay, right. So I take myself out of that. But at the same time, that's given us a niche also to just have a lot of confidence. Our team is very confident behind that. And so that's been, I guess, one of the deals. And then, you know, it's in the news. It's everywhere. All the opioids, all the drugs, all the cartel stuff, all the pharmaceutical madness. It's so evident for everyone now that I've got people telling me about it. So that ship has just kind of come in there. We've had a mandate from our state, a big deal to all the MDs about all the opioids, and chiropractic is now listed in, you know, and I hate to say an alternative treatment, but that's how they see it, right?
Right.
You know, yeah. Let's start somewhere. And so I'm working on being kind of the spokesman to all the medical professionals in our town about what we do. And that's starting to gain some ground. And so that'll be really, because they're not mean or bad people. They just don't know, right?
So 100%.
So anyway, that's exciting. And so, yeah, that's really transformed. You just need to have a rock solid. And the sooner we can get chiros in practice to have a rock solid way to show people subluxation, it's just like game over, man. You know, you can do what you and I have done in a way, way shorter time than what we did it in.
Well, and I think too, and I think it goes down a lot of personality styles because, you know, we talk about chiropractic, and this is what I've seen a lot, is a lot of high drivers are the speakers. So when we go to seminars, we have these high drivers, you know, that they still care what people think, but they're results driven. So they can, you know, and they always talked about have faith and confidence, belief in your services, right?
Right.
And so in the old days, if you're a driver, we call it a doctor driven practice where they will just tell you, even if they didn't have rock solid ways to describe subluxation, their certainty is so good. They're just like, you come in on this care plan. Now, that works so great for a driver, but there's a huge percentage of our population. We do this all the time. The loyal dogs, right? Like our personality, a little bit more amiable.
Sure.
There's a huge personality that are those, and we have a hard time doing that. And that's why we can fall back on our objective findings. And that's what we've done. We got the x-rays in there. We also do substation. HRV has been really amazing for us too, because we're actually measuring the stress response, which then we have our neuro test too. And it is a little bit tough because if someone's a little bit more analytical, what you're doing is you have the black and white part, which is the x-rays, but we call it the 50 shades of gray is the stress response. And the thing is, every single time we see a different human being, they are in a whole different environment. Like everybody has a different environment. So the amount of that's why it's really hard to do the clinical trials with chiropractic and stress, because you have to keep everything the same. You have to have constants except for one variable.
Right.
And that's impossible with human beings.
Yep. Yeah. No, no doubt.
Right.
Absolutely.
So that's why we created that vitality shift too. Is the same sort of thing. Is that the more objective measures you can have, you actually direct it always back to the objective findings.
Yeah.
You don't just go, I'm doing, you listen to me. Right.
Because right.
That just doesn't feel good. Plus, and I'll ask you, and I already know the answer. Mm-hmm. Do you prefer if someone bosses you around and tells you what to do, or do you prefer them to give you the information so you can make your own decision?
Exactly. So, you know, the key line is this, as like, hey, I'm going to show you what's working and what's not working. I'm going to show you how to correct it 100%. You might tell me no, but I'm going to show you, it's my job to show you exactly what to do to correct it. Right.
Yeah.
So that little line, you might tell me no. Okay. Now they're relaxed and now they're listening. Okay.
Yeah.
Cause they know they have an option. And truthfully, you know, to say that they don't have an option, they have an option. They always have an option.
Everybody has an option.
Yeah,
totally.
Exactly. It's their body. You know, you can't boss anyone for very long. You can boss them for a little while.
Yeah.
But it won't be a long-term relationship.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So Brandy always talks about that always in her post too, how we don't want to be a parental. We don't want to have a parental relationship with all of our practice members, right? We want to. And I just did an interview with Jonas Sachs, who's the author of Winning the Story Wars. It was really cool. Is that nowadays our society is not looking for the savior, because in the past, when you marketed a practice, you'd position yourself as
yourself,
the savior,
right?
And the practice member would be the poor person who couldn't look after themselves. And now the new model, which I appreciate way better too, is that we become like this trusted advisor. And then they become the hero. So we want to make all of our practice members the hero, and we can just advise them so that we kind of put all that energy on them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which I think for our personality styles, we're like, oh, thank goodness. Cause we don't really feel comfortable portraying the hero.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, and I had a really good conversation just 2 days ago with my financial guy, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he was like, okay, we got this. And he wasn't like pushing one thing hard, but it really made me think, hey, maybe we ought to do this. And so I was bringing up things, and in his mind, he's like, all right, good. You're bringing it up. You know what I mean? Because we've both been on that, you know, call it sales or call it whatever. But when you have that relationship and all of a sudden it's the other person's idea, I'm like, yeah, Okay. That's when, you know, you show your people results and they're like, I need to be in here a lot more. I was like, well, yeah, you do. Okay. But it's your idea. Yeah. Okay. So when, once you can show, and then it's their idea, then they're going to stick with it. But if it's only your idea ever, they might stick with it, you know, just for a little while, but they're not going to go long-term.
Yeah. I remember a long time ago, I heard Bill Esteb had said, make your office a safe place to fail. And I think that's pretty powerful because we, like you said, I think I took that early on in practice, like, oh, maybe don't tell them anything.
You can go both ways, yeah.
Went the opposite way. But if you really truly tell them what they need, mm-hmm. and then let them make the decision of what they're going to do, then I think that's the combo, right? But I think if you're a people pleaser, we don't want to go the opposite way. So, okay, then I'll just not tell them anything. And then
No, you got to tell them exactly what they need. They got to make the decision. But at the same time, it still hurts me if someone doesn't, you know what I mean? Being a people pleaser, you know what they're missing out on also. Yep. So that's tough, but you got to step away from that a bit.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's switch gears a bit. Let's talk, because this is the other similarity we have, because you work with your wife, Amy.
Oh, I do.
Amazing Amy. I just got to meet her when we were in Chirofest. Me and Brandy, we had a great time talking with you guys at going to Paul Reed's house and stuff. And and so tell me a little bit about that, like how that works with her in the practice. And
So with our kids, the age that they are, she's not in the practice every day, but she's behind the scenes. She's doing marketing. She picked up 120 pies yesterday or whenever, you know what I mean? She does all of that stuff, right? But then we have, as you guys know, we have smooth teams where we help teams and do team training, and CAs and docs come, and we have an online program, which was, you guys have done that too. And that whole thing. But, Amy, when I was at Palmer, she was opening Eddie Bauer stores, around the Midwest. And so what she was doing is she was hiring, she was, you know, doing all the interviewing, doing all the training, you know, getting that whole Eddie Bauer mindset, teaching him the history of Eddie Bauer. And we were like, hey, you know, if they have to have the history of Eddie Bauer to put a shirt on a shelf, right?
Right.
Our teams need to know the history of chiropractic, chiropractic philosophy, how to explain chiropractic, how to be rock solid in all those aspects. If that's what Eddie Bauer did, my Lord, aren't we helping, you know, doing way more than what Eddie Bauer ever did? And so we transferred all of those principles and concepts into our training.
Yes.
So
that's all. And did she start off working with you pretty like right away, or when did she start working with you?
In fact, when we moved to Nebraska, they moved her to the Lincoln, Nebraska Eddie Bauer store. So she managed that store or was a co-manager of that store for, I'm going to say, a couple of years, maybe a year and a half. And then we had kids, you know, kind of right away, Graham.
Right.
And so Graham is now a senior in high school. So, man, we're looking at colleges and everything. But back at that time, she always, we were never, it was never like I'm doing my thing and she's doing her thing. We were always in each other's stuff all the time. And so every seminar she was there, and even through Palmer helping me study. I mean, we were just always... She was never out of chiropractic, even if she was working for Eddie Bauer at the time, if that makes sense.
That's awesome. And what kind of things do you guys do to kind of, you know, separate? Because it's tough when you work with your wife or your spouse. What kind of things do you do to kind of keep yourself, like, you know, keep the relationship good plus the practice good? Because sometimes it can all get blended together.
It can, and sometimes does anyway. The same time, it's funny because we kind of like the same things. And so some of our dinners, man, we're talking about the office and we're talking about, man, how can we get into this business? We've been trying with the teachers to do this and that, you know what I mean? And so we don't separate a ton. Where it helps our relationship is where we bash heads a little bit. And usually ends with me saying, you know what, you're right. And, you know, I was trying to be, you know, we don't like to be wrong. Even if we're loyal people, we don't like to be wrong. And I think where it helps our relationships is even if we're in a business and or a consulting kind of thing and we're bashing heads, it's the makeup, right? And that's where we go forward. And that's what actually helps our relationship. So we don't, this is going to sound bad, but we don't take a ton of time to get outside of what we're doing through chiropractic, through the real estate, through those sorts of things. I think because we both love it. But we do take time away to go set goals and to say, hey, know, how are the kids doing? Where are we with family goals? And so that's, I guess, where we separate and we say, hey, how is practice? How is smooth teams? How are all these things contributing to our family goals? And are we not neglecting those pursuits in a business pursuit? And I think sometimes we'll bash heads about that, but that's how we grow. And that's how we define our love languages. And that's yeah. how we can further use business to build each other up in the love languages. I'm acts of service. She is all about words of affirmation and quality time. Yeah. And so I know that. And when I feel that distance or that cold, you know, I was like, okay, what have I been doing? Have I been doing affirmation? Have I been doing quality time? It's always no. Okay. So that was easy. You know, it's taken me some growing to step back and say, hey, what am I not providing here? Right. And how can we get back on that? And so the other day, a couple of weeks ago at 6 a.m, I said, hey, pack your bags. I'm going to get home at 10. We're going to Omaha and kids are all taken care of. We're going to go up in the business suite thing, you know, where it's quiet. We're just going to hammer out goals. And then we're going to go have a couple of cocktails, have a nice dinner, you know, and you know, whatever. So it's things like that have to happen to, you know, I wouldn't say that's a separation of business because we're still talking about goals, but it's a different environment, get out of town, those sorts of things.
Yeah. And I think that we're the same, right? We do have a tendency because we love it so much to do it a lot. And so it's funny, I've done a few interviews with a couple of guys and one guy I've been in practice for 47 years. And what his recommendations were when I was younger, I should have took a few more holidays. So sometimes chiropractors cannot take those holidays when it would be good for them. But I think I agree 100% is that we enjoy it. So that's why we do it, because we love it. It's part of our life, right? So so this podcast is going to be flying in January. So it's going to be the new year for everybody.
Sure.
And so maybe that's a perfect leeway into how do you go into the new year? Like how do you wrap your head around setting goals and mm-hmm. stuff?
I've got to give some credit to Glow again here too, because he has done a good job, even though he's around the world, to plan seminars around family things. Okay. And so we talked about Amy and I a couple weeks ago. And so a couple weeks ago was the beginning of November. So just to give guys and gals a perspective of when do we think about these things? Well, not on January 2nd, right?
Right.
Yeah. So in November, we pretty much know what the last year has been, how this year is going to end up for the most part. You know, maybe you're whatever, a little bit off, but at the same time, you pretty much know by this point in the year what's already happened. Okay.
Yeah.
And so you need to kind of top grade. What did we do good last year? What did we do crappy last year? Let's get away from the crap and get towards the good. Right.
Right.
So that's the number one thing. And I will say this year more than any, and we did some last year, but this year more than any, we're going to plan the family stuff first. Then we're going to plan the consulting and the practice marketing around the times that we're just going to be gone, and we're going to take those times off. So that first takes talking to the kids. You know, what are their goals? You know, and what do we have to have out of our businesses to support the goals that we want to do there? So we sat down and we just said, hey, what are, you know, whether it be, just take the practice, for example, what do we have to, what's our goal that has to be met next year? What would be really awesome? Okay. And then what would be just psycho, right? What would be the top end psychoness? You know, what would that mean for our family, our team, everyone involved? You know, if we just knock it out of the park, those types of things. And so we set those goals for the practice. We set those goals for smooth teams. We've set those goals. The real estate stuff is almost done, you know, so I'm not thinking of that. But at the same time, it's more the practice, associates, those sorts of things. And so I guess having those different, I'd rather aim high and miss than, you know, aim low and hit. Right.
Right.
So, those are the things that we think about. But I think the shift in my gray hair right here has been, you know, let's put the family stuff in there. Yes. You know, what do we want to see happen in our church? And then let's plan the business around those things. And like you said, I probably should have done that some years ago. But at the same time, whatever.
Yeah, well, we learn as we go, right? And so that's one of the biggest differences, probably, like how you set goals before to how you set now. Because I know too, as we evolve, we set them different as well. We almost set up just projects because, you know, once you have your practice rolling on a certain level, now it's more like little projects rather than, you know, the old way where we'd like write 101 goals or 200 goals or something like that.
And
now it's a little bit more focused, because I think now as you get in practice longer and as we get older, I think we get a lot more clear on what's valuable to us.
Yep.
And so in the past, I think sometimes I would even set up goals that really probably weren't high in my values, but they just sort of sounded good.
Right.
And so I think that's cool, because now you start to prioritize what's the most important for you. And then you start to book those first.
Well, and I'm 42. And so what's funny is, you know, we poured a ton of cash into the real estate things and that, you know, on a tax situation that was losing really good for us, you know, for a while, you know, so we felt really cash poor for quite a while. Now that is starting to come around differently as the years go by. Now we're always, you know, and we've always done some retirement, but we're shifting into, you know, monies go different places as you, you know, go through different stages and everything. And so that's a shift, and that's been kind of fun. And I'm learning a ton more about financial things. And, you know, it's just, again, you know, those stages that you go through.
Well, and I think too, and I think Brandon was just doing a consult too with a chiropractor. And when they first come out of school, it's amazing how little we know about money.
Oh, dude.
And so like, that's a huge recommendation. How did you learn about money? Like, was there any resources you did, or did you just kind of over time?
Yeah. So, one time we had, you know, I'm just going to throw out some, you know, whatever. We had a ton of money, you know, like in the beginning, you're just like, oh, let's knock it out. Let's go crazy. We got all this energy. Yeah. We haven't quote unquote spent a lot yet. And all of a sudden we had a huge, I mean, for us at the time, a couple $100,000 at the end of the year. And we're like, oh shit, what do we do? And an accountant, which, you know, wasn't great, you know, he's like, cause we were thinking, hey, in the back of our mind, we're going to be building a different building. We're going to buy some land. We're going to do some other things. And he's like, and it was December. And he's like, do you guys got to spend that? He's like, what do you mean you got to spend that? He's like, well, if you don't spend it, you're going to get taxed on it. You know, blah, blah, blah. All this.
Oh no.
Dude, we bought an Escalade. We bought a house. We bought a, you know, skid loader. We bought it. Oh dude, we bought all this stuff in like 1 month. We spent like a ton of time. So that was a school of hard knocks, you know, that was a school of, wait, those weren't assets, you know? So anyway, I've just started reading. I love reading, you know what I mean? And so there's different times in my life where I've read a ton of financial things. And then there's different parts where I'll read a ton of spiritual things and a ton of business things and a ton of personal development, whatever. So there has been, times where we've just done stupid stuff and then we've learned from it.
Yeah. And it's funny because sometimes you can get learned. I remember when I was with Palmer, there was a guy who was sitting, he took us out for drinks. You always love that when the chiropractors come back. And I'll never forget. He goes, remember to pay your taxes, because he had his first year where he rocked it out and he did the same thing and he bought all that stuff. And then at the end, then he had his tax bill and he had no money left and he had like this huge, massive tax bill. So if there are any young grads listening out there, don't spend all your money right away. Pay your taxes.
A good counsel that way. We just had some, you know, trip ups along the way, but we've always 30% back, you know, at least, and look at your quarterly, see what your business is doing. We've had a lot of good counsel that way. So we've never been stuck. We've always had, you know, just keep a ton back, you know, for taxes and, you know, be at a situation where at the end of the year or the tax year that you actually have had so much back. And if you have a good accountant and they've, you know, cross T's and dotted the I's, you know, have something that you're like, oh, hey, we didn't have to give all that back. Now we've got some dough that is actually free and clear, you know, beyond taxes and everything like that. So always be on the conservative side. We've always been on the conservative side that way.
Yeah, that's super helpful. Sure. Well, thanks very much for being on this podcast. And
totally.
And I really enjoyed it. And we always usually end it with, you know, just giving some word to advice. So you got Underdog Nation. They got people all over the world listening.
Right.
And, do you have any parting words of wisdom?
You know, one of the things that we can just get so caught up in day to day, the ups and downs of every little decision that other people make, you know, and if that steals your joy, which it did a lot for me, we talk about, you know, the one guy that didn't get great results and the 100 guys that did.
Yeah.
I've just learned to really control and start to look at the big picture and, you know, take, you know, this too shall pass. That's that I always just say, this too shall pass. If it's going rock solid and you can't believe how much you're kicking ass, that'll pass, right?
Yeah, it totally will. Yeah.
And if you're in a valley, yeah, that'll pass too. Just keep hammering it out, right? And yeah. And don't get fired up on the little things. You know what I mean? That's the biggest thing, that this too shall pass. Just keep remembering that.
That's great. Well, those are some amazing words of wisdom. There's lots of little gems in there that I think all our listeners can take away, especially don't spend all your money and pay your taxes.
But, yeah, that's right.
But thanks again. Thanks very much for being on the podcast. This is my brother from another mother. I appreciate it. Right. And everybody out there, like always, don't forget, get out there and crush the curse.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you receive value from this episode, please take some time to rate and review us on iTunes or your favorite place to listen to podcasts. If you know a fellow chiropractor that could benefit from this message, please share it with them. Because it's my goal to provide you with great content, please contact me if you have any questions at drdonmcdonald.com or find me on Facebook. I look forward to hearing from you. So until next time, Dr. Don out.